So today we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter number 15, text number 34.
Yaya aharat bhuva bharam tam tanum vijahau aja kantakam kantakena eva dvayam cha api ishitu samam yayaharam bhuva bharam thantam vijahavaja kantakam kantakeneva vayam chapi shitu samam yayaharat bhuva bharam thantam vijahavyaja kantakam kantakeneva vayam chapi shitu samam yayaharam bhuva bharam tantam vijahavaja kantakam kantakeneva vayam chapi shitu samam
yaya, that by which aharat took away bhuva of the world, bharam burden, tam that, tanum body, vijaho relinquished, aja the unborn, kantakam thorn, kantakena by the thorn, eva like that, dvayam both, cha also, api although, ishitu controlling, samam equal. Translation and purport by Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Unborn Lord Krishna caused the members of the Yadu dynasty to relinquish their bodies, and thus he relieved the burden of the world. This action was like picking out a thorn with a thorn, though both are the same to the controller. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur suggests that the rishis, like Shonaka and others, who were hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from Suta Goswami at Naimisharanya, were not happy to hear about the Yadus dying in the madness of intoxication. To give them relief from this mental agony, Suta Goswami assured them that the Lord caused the members of the Yadu dynasty to relinquish their bodies by which they had to take away the burden of the world. The point is, the Lord caused them. In other words, there was no reason to be all worried and agonized over it because of Krishna's arrangement. That was the point. The Lord and his eternal associates appeared on earth to help the administrative demigods in eradicating the burden of the world. He therefore called for some of the confidential demigods to appear in the Yadu family and serve him in his great mission. After the mission was fulfilled, the demigods, by the will of the Lord, relinquished their corporeal bodies by fighting among themselves in the madness of intoxication. The demigods are accustomed to drinking the soma rasa beverage, And therefore, the drinking of wine and intoxication are not unknown to them. Sometimes they were put into trouble for indulging in intoxication. Once, these sons of Kuvera fell in the bath of Narada for being intoxicated, but afterwards they regained their original forms by the grace of the Lord Sri Krishna. We shall find this story in the 10th canto, where the Supreme Lord, both the Asuras and the demigods are equal, but the demigods are obedient to the Lord, whereas the Asuras are not. Therefore, the example of picking out a thorn by another thorn is quite befitting. One thorn which causes pinpricks on the leg of the Lord is certainly disturbing to the Lord, and the other thorn which takes out the disturbing elements certainly gives service to the Lord. So although every living being is a part and parcel of the Lord, still, one who is a pinprick of the Lord is called an asura, and one who is a voluntary servitor of the Lord is called a devata, or a demigod. In the material world, the devatas and the asuras are always contending, and the devatas are always saved from the hands of the asuras by the Lord. Both of them are under the control of the Lord. The world is full of two kinds of living beings, and the Lord's mission is always to protect the devatas and to destroy the asuras, whenever there is such a need in the world, and to do good to both of them. Oma jnana timananda shagananjana shalakaya chakshuru militam yena tasmai shi gurave namaha. So, what's the point? The point is that you can be either a pinprick or you can be a voluntary servitor. Do you want to be a thorn? You see, we can be a thorn in the leg of the Lord, disturbance, or we can become his voluntary servitors. This is one point for me to arrive from this. There's two types of living beings. There's devata and asura. Demigod and demon, devotee and non-devotee. Prabhupada one time said, you're either a devotee or a demon, there's no in-between. So we have come to this Krishna Ganga's movement. Why? Because we didn't enjoy being demons, non-devotees. It wasn't satisfying. We have come to Krishna Ganga's movement because we want to become devotees. Now we have to master the art. Just like tonight we'll be doing a seminar on pure devotional service. So we can dive deeper into this subject matter of how we cannot be a pinprick in the sight of the Lord, how we can actually be completely in that mood of service to Krishna. It's a very important thing. Not only for Krishna's satisfaction, but for somebody else's satisfaction. You know who that someone else is? That's you. You see? Unless we learn the art of how to completely surrender to Krishna, we suffer. Let me see, how many people here like suffering? Let's see a show of hands. Raise your hand if you like suffering. Do you like suffering? You like to suffer? Prabhu, do you like suffering? English bolo? Angrezi bolo? Speak English? Do you enjoy suffering? Yes or no? No, that's right. Nobody likes to suffer. No one likes to suffer. Therefore, Krishna consciousness is so vital, it's so important, because it brings us out of all the suffering of material existence. Now there's another interesting point here in the purport that we actually came to in our reading of it. The sages there at Naimisharanya, they were hearing from Sita Goswami. And this wasn't very pleasing for them. This is Krishna's family members are having a fratricidal war. Just imagine if we heard some report that some temple somewhere, some ISKCON temple, they're having a big festival, and devotees had too much gulab jamun juice, and they all killed each other, and 10,000 ISKCON devotees murdered each other at a big festival. the Hare Krishna film stuff. Wouldn't that disturb us? I mean, that'd be a horrible thing to hear that. 10,000 devotees annihilated one another over too much gulab jamun juice. You see? I mean, that'd be very hard to hear. Oh my God, 10,000 ISKCON devotees killed each other in a big brawl. You see, that would be very, very disturbing to hear such a thing. So this is the emotion that was experienced by the sages of Namasharana. These are Krishna's family members, and they killed each other. They annihilated each other in this big drunken brawl. You see. So Sita Goswami can understand this is like really disturbing the sages' hearts to hear such a leela. You see, so he wants to assure them this is by the arrangement of Krishna. There's some special thing happening here. There's no reason to be disturbed and feel, you know, horrible about this because Krishna has made some special arrangement. The Lord caused the members of the Yadu dynasty to relinquish their body. So there's a very profound lesson in this for each and every one of us. A very profound lesson. Because each and every one of us have to deal with so many agonizing situations in our life. It's a fact. We come to Krishna consciousness to get relief from all types of agony, but yet there's so many things that are still agonizing us. What are those three types of things? Ariyatmik, Arivautik, and Aridaidik. Ariyatmik, that's miseries of the mind and the body. See, somebody may have some disease of the body which is causing us so much distress. Or maybe we lose our temper. We can't control our mind on it. Sometimes we lose our temper and that causes us distress. And then Aribhautik, misery is caused by other living entities. Maybe we're afraid that some thief will come and rob me. You see. Oh, the thieves will come. I'm afraid to come to the temple at night because the thieves may come and rob my house. You see. That is called Aribhautik misery. And Aridaivik misery is like, I don't think Fiji was hit, but that big tsunami. Huge. One devotee actually sent me a picture. I have it in my laptop computer. He emailed me a photograph of the tsunami coming in. There was a huge hotel about, there's a picture taken from one tall building down on the whole scene. And this hotel was like maybe 12-story building, you know, sitting right near the beach. And here was the wave coming in. It was 12 stories high wave. This huge wave that is as high as the hotel. It was shocking to see. Just imagine you're sitting there on the beach, enjoying getting a suntan. All of a sudden here comes this huge wave, 12 stories high. I mean, that would ruin your day. Might ruin your life. You couldn't run fast enough to get out and get the hell out of there. So that's called Aridaivik misery. Misery is caused by natural disasters, which means misery is caused by the demigods, actually. So we're suffering all these types of agonies in this material world, Ariadmik, Aribhautik, and Aridaivik. Difficult situation. There's so much distress here. Sometimes we want to hear the Bhagavatam, but we're dozing off, you see. That's called Adi Atmik misery, actually. Going into the mode of ignorance in the Bhagavatam play. You see? So these are all different types of miseries and anxieties that come to us and afflict us. So the Krishna consciousness process is a wonderful, wonderful system because it enables you to conquer over all the anxieties, all the agonies of material existence. So therefore, we should master this art. Just like if you're going to drive a car, right? If you can learn how to drive a car, you better learn how to drive it properly. Otherwise, what will happen? Smash. You say, well, I'm just going to learn how to drive the car halfway. That's not good. That's why they have the licensing exam. You have to pass the driver's license exam, otherwise they don't allow you behind the wheel. Because half knowledge is a very dangerous thing. If you're going to take up something, then you better learn how to do it right. If we're going to drive the car, we better learn how to drive it properly so we don't have accidents. So similarly, when we come to Krishna consciousness, we should learn how to do it properly. We should learn how to become expert in sadhana bhakti. I may think, well, you know, it's a lot of struggle. I got to conquer the mind, I got to conquer the senses, and, you know, I'm kind of lazy, and I don't really feel like getting into it that much. You know, they like me at the temple, so, you know, I'm a well-respected man around ISKCON, so that's good enough. No. If we really want to taste the nectar, then we have to get really, really serious. I remember when I was running Tamal Krishna Goswami's tape ministry. When Prabhupada first left the planet, Tamal Krishna Goswami had just a small handful of disciples. But yet he had such big, ambitious plans, and he did so many different departments. So all of us godbrothers, we were doing all the work like that. I was running his tape ministry for him, helping him. Recording the tapes. When he did the first Fiji preaching here, the Fiji tapes came back, and I was editing the Fiji series and then distributing them all over the world for Goswami Maharaj, Srila Gurudev. So, but I remember when I was doing his tape ministry, one of the most popular tapes he did was called, and I recorded it, and then I edited it, and then I distributed it. It was called "It's Time to Get Serious." He gave this lecture in Dallas. And it was really a wonderful lecture. I never forgot that lecture. That one line has stuck with me ever since. It's time to get serious. That's a fact. We may have not gotten fully serious yet about Krishna consciousness, but now's the time we've got to get serious. You may say, well, you know, I'm just a young man, young woman. You know, I got many years ahead of me. I'm just kind of relaxed right now. Later on, I'll get serious. But you know what? Time and tide wait for no man. The smart thing to do is to live every day as if this is going to be your last day on the planet. Why? Because one day it will be. That's a fact. Can you deny that one day will be your last, there will come a day where it will be your last day on the planet? Can you deny that? No. We hate to admit it, but you know, because you need the key. Okay. We hate to admit it. And actually, it's natural that we don't want to admit it. You know why? Because the soul is actually immortal. The actual jiva that you are is an immortal being. That's a fact. So we don't like to admit to mortality, because actually we are not mortal. We are immortal. But the foolishness is we keep thinking that we're the body. We keep thinking the body is immortal because we don't get serious enough about Krishna consciousness. We think, well, I'll kind of take it easy now. Later on. But Srila Gurudev was saying, now's the time to get serious. That was the point. Heavy, heavy lecture. Everyone loved it. He heavied us all out, and everyone loved it. Time to get serious. Right now. That was a hot-selling cassette, let me tell you. They like pancakes. The devotees went wild on that day. We sold a lot of them. It's time to get serious. Because the fact is, why even every day? Why even the last day? We should live every moment as if our last moment. Wake up. This could be your last moment. So you better hear. One time Srila Prabhupada was riding in the car with my godbrother Tejas Prabhu. You know, when you're riding in the car, sometimes it's a little monotonous, you just kind of, you know, nod out while you're riding in the car. Just like yesterday in the bus, so many people were like, you know, on that long morning bus ride on the King's Highway. From Tupwa to Suba. So many people. So anyway, Tejas Prabhu, my godmother, was nodding out. He was sitting by Prabhupada, or maybe Prabhupada in the front seat. So, you know what Prabhupada told him? He said, "Do you know where you are going? Wake up!" So, one of my godbrother, Gorgavinda Maharaj, he was giving lecture in Mayapur, and he left his body while he was giving a lecture. It's not that, well, when I sit on the Vyasasthan, I'm immune to the laws, I'm immune to Yamaraj's call. I'm sitting in the Vyasasthan. I can leave my body right now, this minute. That'd be a great way to go, wouldn't it? Giving a class. It'd be a wonderful way to leave the body. So, the point is, we've really, really got to get serious, like Srila Gurudev was saying. It's time to get serious. Because we never know, this could be my very last day. So the question is, what does it mean to get serious? What is the actual meaning of that? How can I do it? If we say, okay, Sankarshan Prabhu, that sounds like a good idea. Gurudev said we should do it, and you're saying we should do it. It sounds like a good idea. Now, how we can do that? How can we get serious now? Get really serious about Krishna consciousness? Actually, the nice thing is it's fun. It's not some drudgery or some agonizing thing. No. Getting serious about Krishna consciousness is ecstatic. It's enlivening. It's nectar. It's like a, you know, it's like getting the ultimate blood jam with unlimited blood jam juice. So it's definitely worth it, getting serious about Krishna consciousness. It's really worth it. So how do you do that? How do we get really serious about Krishna consciousness? Well, what we have to do is we have to become introspective. We have to learn to see ourselves very honestly on three different levels: thinking, speaking, and acting. We should always be conscious of what we're thinking about. Am I thinking in such a way that my spiritual master would be pleased with me? If my spiritual master. Actually, the spiritual master can see the thoughts of the disciple. Krishna can see, Guru can see. So, we should always be thinking in such a way that Guru will be pleased with us. Just imagine if there was a special instrument that could be inserted, that pointed at you, you know, some little instrument. You know, a little wiretap or something, where all of your thoughts could be broadcast on a big screen here in the temple room. That all the devotees could just come in here and see what you're thinking about 24 hours a day. Every single thought that went through your mind. Would you have to hide in your room out of embarrassment of all your impure thoughts? Or could you walk into the temple room without having to blush at all? In other words, we have to discipline our thoughts. It's very important. Goswami. There's two types of people. Goswami and Gosasa. And what is that verse? Vapsha Vegam, Manasa, Rodha Vegam. Mind, you see. The words, mind. So the mind has to be controlled. The nice thing is, if you control your mind nicely, then your words will automatically be proper. If your mind is always fixed on Krishna, if you're always thinking in such a way that is pleasing to Krishna, then your words will be very nice and your actions will be very nice. So this is the wonderful thing about the association of the devotees. Devotees help us to see our own faults. I mean, let's admit it. We're proud. We're proud of that. It's difficult for me to see my own faults because I'm a conceited rascal. It's difficult for me to see my own faults. But by being a member of this con, there are so many people here who are willing to point out my faults to me. So many fault finders are there, and that's mercy. There's so many devotees who point out to me my faults. Especially my, you know, senior god brothers, my peers, like Vir Krishna Maharaj. You know, he doesn't hesitate to point out a fault. He sees a fault in me, he'll tell me. So this is very good. If we have devotees who will point out our faults, and we shouldn't put a block against them. We should be open to hear and try to understand what they're saying that's wrong with me. Because it's easy for us to see faults in others, but hard for us to see faults in ourselves. So we should learn how to hear others, how they are seeing us. Because we think, well, I'm doing very nicely in my service. But others are seeing so many discrepancies. So we should learn to see from how others are seeing us. Because that will give us a better balanced understanding of where we're actually at spiritually. And so that will help us to become more pure. So by taking feedback from other devotees and learning to see our own faults, get a better understanding of our own faults, and then working to rectify those faults, very seriously trying to conquer over our faults, that will enable us to advance very, very nicely in Krishna consciousness and to taste that full nectar. What is stated in the Bhagavatam? You know that verse? Ahaitakiya pratiyata yatma supasiditi. You know that verse? You know that verse? Ahaitakiya pratiyata yatma supasiditi. You're not studying the Bhagavatam? Ahaitakiya pratiyata yatma supasiditi. That one's devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. So, if we want to be satisfied, is there anybody here who doesn't want to be completely satisfied? If you want complete satisfaction, then what do you have to do? You have to be 24 hours without any break, be absorbed in bhakti. Every thought, every word, and every deed. And a haitaki means with no material motivation. That's such a nice word, a haitaki bhakti. Actually, I just named one of my disciples, one Mataji in Finland, who just recently got initiated. I gave her that name because she was such a nice devotional mood. So I gave her that name, a haitaki bhakti Devi Dasi. Because that's an important thing, to do devotional service without any material motives. Prabhupada explains that in the Bhagavatam. That sometimes somebody does devotional service in exchange for material power. It's inappropriate. And then he says, Krishna then will take their position away from them. And we've seen that in our movement. We've seen people come, they get become very powerful leaders, and then they leave the Krishna consciousness movement. You see, because they were doing devotional service in exchange for material power. And they got that. Krishna gave them the power. But you know what? Material power doesn't satisfy the soul. Only Krishna bhakti satisfies the soul. They got the power, but they didn't get Krishna consciousness. They didn't taste the nectar in Krishna's holy name. And therefore, even though they had a big position, they had so many followers, so much money, so many big facilities, they weren't happy and they gave it up. Went back to being a karmi again. So we don't require, all we have to do is be in this mood of unmotivated, uninterrupted devotional service. And then we will taste the sweetest nectar. Actually, there's so much nectar in one pure utterance of Krishna's name. Hare Krishna. There's so much nectar in one pure utterance of Hare Krishna that the whole universe can't even hold that nectar. Can you imagine? The Hare Krishna mantra has unlimited nectar. So all we have to do is learn how to chant defenselessly. We simply have to come to the platform of Shuddha Naam. And then we can taste so much nectar from Krishna consciousness. Now we're not tasting the nectar. We're struggling. Well, I gotta get up. I gotta chant my rounds in Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Mechanically we're chanting. We don't have the taste. So we, why? Because we're committing nama-param. So we have to learn how to avoid the nama-parads. Many, many people ask me, I get so many letters, people are asking, emails, you know, I'm chanting but I'm not tasting the nectar, what am I doing wrong? Why am I not tasting the nectar? It's simply due to nama-parad, that's all. So we have to learn how to avoid nama-parad. And what's the first aparad? To criticize the devotees. If we have a critical attitude, a fault-finding attitude of the devotees, you know, always looking, well, this devotee has that bad quality, and this devotee is... The point is, we have to learn how to appreciate the wonderful saintly qualities of the devotee. We should learn how to see in each and every devotee, what are the wonderful saintly qualities this person has. Then it's very difficult, I mean, then it's very easy to avoid committing aparad, because you're always worshipping that devotee's wonderful qualities. So this we should learn to do, this art, how to see within each and every devotee what are the wonderful, nice, saintly qualities that devotee has. We may get along well with that devotee, we may not. Maybe he and I don't get along well. But still, I must find some wonderful quality that devotee has and always worship that quality within my heart. Appreciate that devotee's quality. Because Krishna says, if you think you're my devotee, you're not. You know that verse in the Adi Purana. He says, unless you are the devotee of my devotee, forget it. You're not my devotee. So that means, yes, the guru, right? Of course it does. Does that mean, but not the Vaishnavas in general? No, it means all the devotees. And this is confirmed by Narottam Das. He says, Ananda Balohari Vajavrindavan Shri Guru Vaishnava Pade Majayam. He says, you should ecstatically chant Hare Krishna. You should worship that wonderful Vrindavan Dham. And you should always, within your heart, worship the lotus feet of Shri Guru and Vaishnavas. So it's not just we worship our Guru Maharaj. You see, we respect the, you know, the older devotees and the other devotees as rascal. No. We have to learn how to love and appreciate every single devotee. And actually, an advanced devotee, he learns how to love and respect every jiva, even a little ant. He's respecting even a little ant. He's seeing the super soul that's present in the heart of that ant. What to speak of a Vaishnava? He even respects a little ant. So in this way, we have to become very, very serious about this process of Krishna consciousness. And we have enough time maybe for one or two questions. And I can understand the acoustics in this room with my... I'll have somebody come forward and tell me the question, probably. You can try, but I probably won't hear it over the fan. But if there's any questions, I can try to answer them. Any questions? One point is, Krishna actually says you should ask questions in the Bhagavad Gita. Does this try to learn the truth by approaching the spiritual master, inquire submissively, lend your service? So this is ordered by Krishna to ask questions. And this was one way that Jai Pitaka Maharaj got the special mercy of Prabhupada when he was a young brahmachari in Montreal. You know that story? He would always, some devotees told him, it's always good to ask a question. So every time there was a class, he would hear very carefully and think of a very nice, relevant question. And then one day, so he was always asking a question. And one day, because all the devotees had jobs, he had to go to work during class. And Prabhupada said, "Where is that boy who asked those nice questions?" Because he noticed that there was no question asked that day from him. So it's actually a very nice thing to ask questions. It also shows that you when you were listening. If nobody asked any questions, you'd think, well, they were just sitting there smiling and nodding and waiting for the 7 o'clock to come so they wouldn't have to be over or wouldn't have to be tortured any longer. You see? Then I'd really know that someone was hearing. Or another way of looking at it is, I have actually a policy that if you don't ask me questions, I will ask you questions. It's much easier to be the one that's asking the question than it is to be the one who's asked the question. So that's another one of my policies, to encourage you to ask questions. If you don't want to ask me a question, then I'll pick one of you and I'll start interrogating you in front of all the devotees. And you may have to be a little uncomfortable and embarrassed. You see? So it's always good to ask me the question because it spared you being asked the question. Yes.
Prabhu, what about the devotee that misuses Krishna's property, Krishna's money, but still engaging in Krishna's
service? Yes, yes. Now, when I said that we shouldn't find fault with others, that doesn't mean that if someone is doing the wrong thing, that we have to ignore them. No. When I say that we shouldn't be critical or fault-finding, that means in other words, if someone is doing the wrong thing, then they must be corrected. But if someone is not doing anything wrong, and out of envy we're finding fault with them, even though they're not doing anything wrong, that's bad. You see? Sometimes envious people will criticize even when someone isn't doing anything wrong. That's the bad thing. But it's the duty, especially the older devotees, the temple managers, if someone is doing wrong, it's their duty. In fact, that is also the guru's responsibility. It's described that if the father and the guru do not correct the student and the son, the disciple and the son, then they are an enemy. The superior has to correct and chastise the junior. That's his responsibility. But it is not done out of envy or not done in a fault-finding spirit. It is done out of love, you see. So if you can lovingly, out of a genuine desire to help someone, you can point out their fault to them. That's not considered fault-finding. That's compassion. But you have to be intelligent if you want to correct someone. Of course, if it's a thief, then you just have to take whatever action is necessary, even calling the police. Prabhupada did that. There was one person who was impersonating a devotee collecting money in the name of ISKCON. And he was caught. And they were going to throw him and, give him to the police. The police came in Mayapur to take him away to jail, and then he he fell down at Prabhupada's feet and begged mercy. The police were there ready to haul him off, and Prabhupada said, "All right, then let him stay here because he's taking shelter of me." So for a few days he went on as a devotee, but then they saw him early in the morning with his suitcase getting ready to leave the temple, so then they called the police and had him arrested. So if someone's a thief, they can't pose as a devotee and go on. If someone is a thief, they have to be dealt with properly. Because that's not good for them if they steal Krishna's property. It hurts them spiritually. The karmic reaction is very bad. When someone steals from the temple, out of kindness, we have to take stringent action to put a stop to them. To help that person karmically. Anyway, I can see Pujari has now come. I'm waiting. And I'm over time, so we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.